Hello, friends. I could go for that children's message over and over again. For the little ones, obey your parents. Our reading today is Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We're also reading from Isaiah 40, 30 through 31. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint.
Series on rising above. This is the last of that series, and next time I speak is next Sunday. We have a guest speaker, as you know. I'm going to start through the book of Philippians. Stress. None of us get stressed, do we?
Yeah, I'm in May. For Dale. Yeah.
I did that one for you, John, watching live stream. I thought you'd like that. Okay. Well, 75 to 80% of medical issues presented at doctor's surgeries or hospitals are somehow related to stress. It's a huge issue in our country. And it's something that anxiety reduction is a mega business these days. And you just go on YouTube and look up stress, and you've got countless videos on how to get rid of stress, how to overcome stress and deal with it in our lives, because it's such a huge issue. So what is stress? Well, the actual idea comes originally from the idea of exerting force on something in order to change it, to stress, put stress on material or metal or whatever it might be, that idea to distort it or to move it. But the way it's used in our contemporary society and the way people have to deal with stress has to do with the inner response of our environment to an outside circumstance, something that occurs that results in an inner response to that. Or it might be an expectation that's put on us or that we put on ourselves, or a threat that we might face, and it grips our minds and our emotions and it affects us deeply. So when we're in danger, the brain, it's a natural mechanism that God has placed in the brain. The brain releases cortisol, and that cortisol is secreted, causes the heart rate to increase considerably, and adrenaline is secreted, and we're ready for fight or for flight. And so it's a natural thing. Stress is part of living, we can't avoid having some form of stress. And if there's, but however, if there's no danger and we are still stressed and we maintain a level of stress through our lives, through our day, it then releases the same kind of effect from our brain, but there's no fight or flight, and so it's a continual thing. It's meant to be just an instantaneous, brief thing when we're faced with danger or when something happens that causes us to respond in a way that our body's all geared, ready to go. But if there's nothing to do, then long term it has detrimental effects on our heart, on our minds, on our bodies, and hence medical issues that arise from, partly anyway, from stress. So more people die of stress-related medical issues than die in accidents in this country. It is a big, big issue. Now, there's healthy stress and there's unhealthy stress. Unhealthy stress, what's its cause? Well, a number of things. I'll just list them out here. You'll see them up there. The threat. There might be financial threat and you're stressed because you can see around the corner you're not going to make it, and that causes stress. Or it might be employment issues and you are coming to the end of your contract in 2 months, 3 months or whatever, and you've got to go back and retire or whatever. Yeah, sorry, for those of you guests, visitors, I'm talking about myself here because we're about to do that. But it might be physical. It might be a perception, or it might be real. I remember we had to get to the airport in Melbourne, Australia, where we were. We needed somebody to take us, and somebody from the church said, "Yeah, well, I'll take you. I'll drive you there." So this guy drove to the airport. Now, we weren't running late or anything, but do you ever play Tetris at the lights? You know Tetris, that old game? So you've got a long line here and a short line there. And if you're in the long line and you're coming up to the long line and you see there's a short line, I'll automatically go into the other lane so that I can go right up near the front. But he wouldn't do that. He's cruising along and took forever because he wasn't in a hurry. He was just enjoying the trip. But I was stressed because, why don't you do that? Come on, move. And in my mind. And so there was stress for me, but for him, he was enjoying the ride. I thought, that's sometimes like life, you know. We get stressed when we don't need to, and somebody else is in the same ride, and they're just enjoying life. Another time, I was also going to the airport, and it was very slick and very, very dangerous roads, and there weren't many cars on the road, and somebody was taking us to the airport again another time, and very close to the car up front and traveling at quite a speed, and I was stressed, but it was a real stress. I mean, there was reason for the stress, I think, anyway. I was just imagining us sliding off the road, you know. So there can be perceived stress or there can be real stress, but unhealthy stress. Okay. So it could be not just threat, but fear. We lived in Oakland, California for a year, and we were right close to a bad part of Oakland. And Marg told her, the others at the church, that she walked down to the bank. And said, "You didn't." She said, "Yeah, we did. I did." "So you don't walk down that area. You know, that once you get past this street, whatever, you don't walk down there." And one house in five was burgled every year or something. It was like it was not a very good area we were right close to. But I don't remember being stressed about that. Do you, love? No. And I think we were just trusting God and leaving it in His hands. And so we're in a place where there was possibility of stress because of fear, but we trusted God in that, and God was good. He looked after us. And so I'm just giving you some scenarios of how stress can be avoided or can be real in different situations. Unhealthy stress also comes from uncertainty. let me ask you, what in life is really, really certain? There's nothing really in life that you can say is absolutely certain. I will live this long, and my wife or husband will, and we'll have money right through the end of our lives, and all the rest of it. We don't know what's around the corner, so that can cause stress. And then life causes, there may be stress in your marriage, health issues, family problems, parenting. That brings stress automatically. So then there's good stress. Good stress is the living in a world where you have to do stuff, and there's time, and you have to be there on time, so on. There's normal stress. It's part of life. It's impossible to live a stress-free life. It'd be dull and boring. We got friends back in Australia in our home church, and he got an aneurysm in his brain, and he was a go-getter, and he was a painter. He used to paint houses and give quotes and all that. He's a great, great guy. But his aneurysm resulted in leaving him just a placid, lovely man, but with no purpose. He lost his drive. He lost his desire to do anything. He was just a guy who loved to sit at home and enjoy life and didn't do anything. And his wife said to me, "You know, we don't have any more arguments, but I wish the old guy was back." He was living a stress-free life, but it wasn't real. And so stress is good. It propels us in life. It allows us to accomplish things. It keeps us alert. It focuses and helps us to build a character. And when we don't have any stress, then life is nothing. Just even getting up this morning, getting here to church, there was an amount of stress in that. There has to be. There was an experiment done in Arizona in the Biodome, it was called, and it's sitting there now as a white elephant. It's not being used. But they did an experiment where there was a huge complex of sealed domes, and it was meant to be a trial at self-sustaining enclosed ecological system so that didn't need outside water, air, or anything. It would just produce and look after itself totally self-sustaining. But you know, a number of things went wrong with it. They had a lot of problems, but one of the problems was that the trees that grew didn't have any real strong roots, so they would fall over because there was no wind and no resistance to that wind, and they'd grow up not being strengthened because of resistance against the wind. And so stress is good for us. Okay? So let's move on. Then there's bad stress. There's not good stress and bad stress in the sense that stress is stress, and good stress can become bad stress when a number of things happen. I used to work for a government aircraft factories in Melbourne. We built the Mirage jet fighters for the Australian Air Force, and I was working as an aircraft sheet metal worker, which was a trade that I was doing an apprenticeship with. And part of my job was to fold duralium, which is, I don't know what you call it here, but it's like aluminium or aluminium, you call it aluminium mixed with another metal that made it tougher, but it was still lightweight. And we had to make flanges, and these flanges had to be folded up in a folding machine. Nowadays, it's probably all done automatically on machines that they just set it and away it goes. But for us back then in the 60s, it was these folding machines, and you put the metal in, clamp it down, and adjust the folder, and then you'd lift up the folding part of it, and it would bend the metal into the exactly right shape. Well, if we didn't get the width of the metal correct in the fold, it would put stress on the fold, on the actual corner, and it would be rejected. It couldn't be used because that stress would weaken the corner, and the flange couldn't be used in the supersonic aircraft. But there was stress used in folding it. Obviously, there was stress needed to fold the piece of metal, but if it was not correct, then it would make it a stress that resulted in damage and it couldn't be used. I thought of that as a kind of illustration of life, that we need stress, like bending that piece of metal. We need stress, but if we don't get it right, we will then cause damage. So stress, bad stress causes us to feel overwhelmed, filled with anxiety. Our bodies are designed to give warning signals of bad stress. So when you have disturbed sleep and you're worried about something, thinking about something, and it stops you sleeping, or you have digestive problems, it can result in headaches or chronic tiredness, irritability, and a reactive depression. So let's then look at how do we deal with stress. Now, we've looked at Psalm 23. We're going to come to that. But just initially, I want to say there's two ways. First of all is wisdom. There are natural, wise ways that we can deal with stress. First of all, stop. Replace unhealthy ways of coping. You know, go to the alcohol or go to the binge eating, comfort food, or whatever it might be when you're stressed, and unhealthy ways of coping with stress. Stop. So I've got here, stop, look, and listen. Stop. Secondly, look. Be aware of ways where you are contributing to the stress. Like, you get stressed trying to get to church or the office or whatever on time. Well, set your alarm clock 10 minutes earlier and leave 10 minutes earlier. Aim to leave in time to be there 10 minutes early, and then that takes the stress out. Just a simple thing like that. Or it might be spending money when you don't have a budget that covers that and adds so much stress. So don't buy that new dress or that new cap, that Colts cap or whatever it might be that you're buying. You haven't got the money for it this month, so don't put it on your credit card. Don't add to the stress that you already have. And so there are wise ways. So stop, look, and then listen. Listen to your body and its signals. Set aside time to rest and relax. Take regular time off if you're in a full-time employment, and make sure that you have a break, that you do exercise, deep breathing, and other stuff like that that you can. Make sure that your body is having that time out. Jesus said to his disciples, come aside and rest. He saw the need to have time out. In fact, God gave us the seventh day as a means for us to pull back from work and for everything and just relax and rest. And that is a principle in creation, not just in the law for Israel. And then finally, laugh, have fun. Where I said that I went on YouTube and put in stress and came up with all these, and a lot of them were stress relief comedy. And you can go there yourself and see that there's all sorts of comedy that will help you. If you watch the comedy and laugh, then it relieves the stress. It takes the stress away. Remember Proverbs 17:22, a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit saps a person's strength. A cheerful heart. So enjoy fun and do fun stuff. Play with your grandkids or play with your kids. Get out there. Don't be so busy that you don't have time to do the stuff that is just enjoyable in life. Whatever that might be for you. So that's the first thing to deal with it, is a wise approach to life. Stop, look, listen, and laugh. Now, the Psalm 23, which we want to look at briefly, and that is to trust God. Remember Jesus said, he said, peace I leave with you. That word is bequeath. So he was about to be crucified, and he said, my peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. He gives peace. One of the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace. So Psalm 23. You know, when you read this psalm, we all know it. We think of David sitting out on the hillside and he's playing his harp and he's looking at the sheep that are just grazing around him. Do you know what? That was not the time that he wrote this psalm. Some weeks ago I spoke through on, I think it was dealing with this subject of fear, and we looked at Psalm 3. It's the same time that Psalm 3 was written, when David was fleeing because his son Absalom had usurped the throne and was chasing him and his few of his loyal subjects as they fled from Jerusalem and went into the wilderness to hide because Absalom, his son, was wanting to kill him. And in that scenario, in that situation, this is when David wrote the psalm. As he was facing the stress, man, he was stressed. There was natural stress because of his situation, but he wrote down, "The Lord is my shepherd." He remembered, having been a shepherd for so long in the fields, he knew the relationship between the shepherd and the sheep. And now he was not the shepherd. David was fleeing and he was the sheep. And he looked to God as his shepherd in that situation. So let me read it to you in another version, different to what we had read to us earlier. And as I read it, think of him in the valley of the wilderness of Judah, as he was in that very precarious and vulnerable situation, could have lost his life very easily. "The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will pursue me, will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." It's a new look at the psalm when you consider the situation that he faced when he wrote this psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. First of all, our shepherd watches over us. He had watched over his sheep. He'd fought off the bear and the lion. He'd protected them, guided them. He was in charge of his sheep. Our shepherd is in charge of us. He's overseeing everything. Our lives are in his hands. He is sovereign over all. He is God in charge of every event. Not even a sparrow falls to the ground except my Father. And your Father knows. And you are worth more than a sparrow. Even what for us is small things in life or the big things of life, from God's perspective, they're all small. And he cares for them all. He cares for us. The Lord is my shepherd. Oh, here's Absalom and his army coming against me, but the Lord is my shepherd. And how are we going to eat? We're out in the wilderness here. I shall not want. Our shepherd provides. A shepherd guides the sheep to the pastures where there is good food and water. Jesus cares for us. God, the Father, will provide for us. Jehovah Jireh, the Lord, our provider. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. Our shepherd gives us peace. And that's a perfect picture of peace. The ancient Bedouin shepherds used to say, this is a saying, a quote from them, you can lead a sheep to water, but you can't make it lie down. And what they mean is that for a sheep to lie down, it needs to be one, full, had a full stomach from eating. So in those times, the sheep used to get up and start grazing before dawn, right before dawn. And then they would eat through to around the middle of the day, and then they would sit down and lie down, and because their stomachs were full. But they, not only because they would lie down when they are full, but the second thing that needed to be in place for them to lie down was that they were not afraid. If their stomachs were full and they were not afraid, they're very happy to lie down. Otherwise, they'll stay standing. So our shepherd gives us peace. He makes us lie down in green pastures. He leads us beside still water. Sheep won't eat from fast running water. They have to have calm or relatively calm water for them to drink. It reminds me of Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, which is well known to us all. Don't stress. I'm going to change the word worry to stress. Don't stress about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all that He does. If you do this, you will experience God's peace, which is far more wonderful than the human mind can understand. You can't explain it to someone, the peace that God gives. It's beyond explanation. It is a spiritual empowerment to rest. He leads me, or makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. But our shepherd also renews us. He restores my soul. And that, in the version I read to you earlier, was he refreshes my soul. And it has the idea of healing or renewal. It has the idea of healing, tending wounds, that the shepherd would care for the sheep, and if one of them hurt themselves or was not well, he would tend to that sheep. He would refresh it. He would renew it. He would heal, bring healing to that sheep. And so he restores my soul. Again, think of David out there with the armies coming against him. He restores my soul. Our shepherd guides us. He leads us in paths of righteousness. And when we walk the path that is right, of righteousness, then he gives peace. But when you walk away from God and reject his way, it just adds to the stress and pain. God's way is always best. The Bible says the law of the Lord is good. And then our shepherd protects us. Even though I walk through the deepest dark valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. And maybe you're not walking through a dark valley at the moment, but maybe you will one day. Maybe I will. I'm sure we all will one day, or we have done in the past. You cannot avoid the dark valleys, the deep times, the times of stress that come as a result of circumstances beyond our control, health-wise or relationship-wise or loved ones-wise or whatever it might be. We come to places where there are deep, dark valleys. And in those deep, dark valleys, it says, even though you may walk through the darkest valley, he says, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. And says then, your rod is like a club. The shepherd would beat off the wild animals and use the rod for that. And the staff was what he used to nudge or to pull a sheep into line, to guide them in the right way. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. In the deep valley, you are there with your rod to protect and your staff to guide. Amen. And then our shepherd gives us victory. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. Again, David in the valley with the enemy coming against him. And he looks to God and says, you are the one who gives me victory. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. That's a picture of victory. We're going to win this. And then our shepherd honors us. You anoint my head with oil. my cup overflows. A generous host back in those times would use expensive oils to anoint the foreheads of special guests that came to their place. And so it's a sign of special favor. Special favor, doesn't that remind us of the word grace? The grace of our God. He honors us. And lastly, our shepherd promises us, surely goodness and mercy or love will follow me. And the word there is pursue. Just like Absalom's pursuing David and his small band, so God's goodness and love will pursue me all the days of my life. And I will live in the house of the Lord forever. Even if the worst happens, I have an eternal future with God in heaven. No wonder his stress was turned into faith and trust and peace in his God. We're going to sing the final hymn. And the final hymn is really the Psalm 23 set to a different tune. And it's not the normal 23rd Psalm that we sing. It's the King of Love, my shepherd is. The King of Love, my shepherd is. Let's sing it together and worship our Lord.